All right, welcome back another week. Tall Tales with Taylor Jones. I'm glad to have another week of podcast content for you. Glad to be stringing a few of them together here. Took a couple weeks off a few weeks ago to take a break. Now we're in the middle of, at the top end of season two of my crazy show here. That literally is me sitting in my garage and sometimes talking to myself on the microphone and, you know, just telling you the stuff that's on my mind, which there isn't a whole lot on my mind other than today. I want to talk about the art of tipping the Uber driver. Let me just say, I posted a tweet on my social media today that I know you cannot buy salvation, but anybody who tips an Uber driver $20 has got to be a saint. I don't know if that's theologically correct, but that in the moment is how I feel.
I think it is.
So, that being the case, there is no tipping on the Uber app or what have you. So, if you do happen to have some certificates of appreciation in your pocket, man, tip that Uber driver something. Bless up somebody, man, because I can tell you, $20 to an Uber driver can literally be like a percentage of what they make that day that's a little bigger than they would like for you to know. And sometimes that's just the way it goes. And yeah, tip your waitresses, tip your, you know, whoever, bellboys at the hotel, the
valet,
yeah, especially man. The valets. It's hot out there, man. The valets need some love. Word. And if you have a nice car, tip the valet. Because they might mess your car up. You want them to do a good job for you.
True.
You need to tip the valet. So that's my little stepping stool for today. Nothing really crazy going on around here other than it being 100 degrees. And you go outside to go from the house to the car and your back starts sweating. But other than that, pretty normal day in Nashville. I'm excited today. I have my friend Joel Frame with me today. And we're going to talk a lot about his journey through hip-hop music and otherwise, and also what he's which way now that he's given back to the community here that he just moved into not that long ago.
Yep.
Is that right? How long?
Yeah.
How long ago has it been since you moved in over here down the street from me?
We moved into this neighborhood where we are now a year ago exactly now. So we bought a house a little over a year ago and moved in, you know.
Right, cool, man. That. Where are we coming from?
We were renting in East Nashville for about a year. We moved to Nashville from Springfield, Ohio.
Mm.
And before that, we were in Cincinnati. Before that, we were in Denver. So it's been
wild.
But we're Nashville, man. We're praying this is where God keeps us. And, you know, I want to die in Nashville, man.
There you
not
go.
Early, but, you know.
Well, hey.
I
want to
grow old in Nashville.
Yeah, we can get gray-headed and fat in
man.
Nashville.
Yeah.
One of these days, we'll hit all the restaurants here and eat all the barbecue enough to be fat. So it's crazy about our street, man. Like, just down the street from us, my buddy Justin Kralk lives right here,
mm-hmm.
and he's this really great guitar player.
Oh, cool.
And he lives just a few doors over, which I need to call Justin, actually, and get him on here, matter of fact. And then also, Ross Holmes lives in the Stone House closer to you.
Okay.
On the corner.
The one with the black fence?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. And he's an amazing fiddle player.
Oh, cool.
Like, world-class, legit.
Wow.
You know, he's been all over the world and amazing, amazing. Oh, I got to call him, too. I'm bad about calling.
You got a lot to do.
I got a lot on the street here. Look, like, open your eyes, son. And then just up from there, Ross's wife's brother, Royal, and Sterling, those two guys. Royal's a great bass player, and he just got off the road with Warren Haynes and different
nice.
People like that. And they have a group, Royal and Sterling have a group with Ross called Chess Boxer. It's amazing, like
very cool.
Banjo, fiddle, bass, and mandolin, like Punch Brothers-y, kind of like
is
the early
all
Punch
instrumental
Brothers.
Instrumental or is it vocals?
Yeah,
awesome,
yeah pretty
man.
Much. They
very
might have
cool.
some vocal, but. It's like outer space good, like really, really
awesome.
Good. So just on the street here, man.
It's real in these streets.
I can't believe it because I've been here my whole life, as you know. And like, I remember when there wasn't no kids to play with on the street.
Yeah.
And now I'm like.
So you grew up on this street?
In this house. Yeah.
Oh, for real?
Uh-huh. So my father.
Whoa.
Okay. My father owns this house mm-hmm. that we're in now and the one next door. And what happened was he was getting going to be married a few summers ago. So let's see, 13. So he was like, all right. And him and his wife have been together for a while. And she, you know, I love her. She's helped raise me and everything. So it was a great thing. But they were like, you know, her two kids and stuff were still with her. And it was like, well, this one ain't big enough. So we have to buy the one next door because it's a little bigger and whatever. He's like, so I'm going to need to rent this one out. So either I'm going to rent it to you or you need to get out. One of the two. So I said, well, just rent it to me then. And I didn't really have a job or wasn't making a lot of money at that time, but I just knew that something would figure out, you know.
And yeah.
So I never moved, man. My dad, I waited long enough and he left. So then.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And my brother and I were here for a couple months together. And then he went off, got his own place, and then I was here by myself. And then I got married that fall. So
got you.
So ton of remodeling that we did, all like DIY stuff.
Yeah,
you know. But slowly but surely, it's starting to feel like, you know, a home. So
for sure, man.
But I've been here forever, and it's just been location, location, location. Yeah. It's great to be. It's always been a secret, this little in town.
Yeah, man.
And so, but what do you think about it? I mean, it's like. The perfect, it's right next to everything.
It is, man. I feel like it's absolutely the most ideal location, especially the type of family that I have. You know, my wife Tracy and our two daughters, 5-year-old, 2.5-year-old. We just, you know, we love this area because, you know, there's big yards, big mature trees and stuff. It feels like you're out away from everything, but we're 10 minutes from downtown. 5 minutes from the airport. I mean, you know, everything is just perfect location. So, and the diversity here is just ridiculous, man, which I just love. That's one of the most important things to Tracy and I is diversity, you know, where we're living.
Well, I'll tell you, man, we were talking beforehand on the podcast, before the podcast here, about, I think that's something you and I have in common. I grew up in this area, went to the schools in this area, you know, my stepfather and stepbrothers and half brother, excuse me, like, you know, me and Bruno have always just been, you know, exposed to other cultures.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Thank goodness.
Yeah.
And church we went to was we learned so much, you know, there and everything. But so tell me about, okay, what kind of music did you grow up listening to and liking and performing at some point?
Yeah. So, music has always been the biggest influence for me, man. You know, it's always been the most relevant medium to me. Growing up, my mom is just a beautiful singer, and she loves like smooth jazz and blues and all that kind of stuff. And so, I grew up with through her. Listening to a lot of jazz music. And then my dad was a lot more into the classic rock, Cream, all that kind of stuff, the Animals, the Yardbirds. But he was also huge into Motown. So I had this really, really beautiful kind of melding together of smooth jazz and Motown and some rock. And so I really, at a really young age, grew a really strong appreciation for every type of music, man. And when you look at, you know, the history of hip hop, all of those things kind of came together, you know, in the mid to late 70s, and hip hop was really birthed out of that. And so it was kind of a natural lane for me to go down through getting into hip hop. So, you know, my brother got me my first rap tape when I was really young. It was The Roots, Do You Want More? And man, the first time I heard Black Thought rapping and Questlove on the drums and just the musicality of it all and just you know, that poetry over rhythm, it blew my mind, man. And I immediately just fell in love with hip hop music. But while I loved hip hop, man, I got heavy into drums around 5th, 6th grade, and 8th grade I started playing drums for a hardcore band, and played for a couple different bands all through high school and got real big into really, really heavy metal and hardcore music and hip hop. So, yeah, that's been the musical adventure.
Cool, man. Well, yeah. Well, I totally feel you on growing up with musical parents.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's just like them as fans, like sharing what they like.
Absolutely, man. You know, like, it's huge.
It's the biggest thing. So, like, let me ask you this. Well, how do you approach now showing music to your kids? Like, what's some of the stuff that you've shown them already in their young lives?
In our house, we're a dancing household. Okay. We love to dance. So just the obvious stuff, like Justin Timberlake's new song, Can't Stop the Feeling, a lot of Bruno Mars, a lot of that kind of stuff that's just real fun that the kids, they dig. You know, it sounds good. It's clean. You know, we listen to a lot of that with them just because it gets them dancing, it gets them moving and excited about music. But when they're riding with me in the minivan, man, dude, we listen to a lot of underground hip hop, and it's always clean, you know. But just a lot of there's some really great collectives that came out of, like, when Christian hip hop was really, really lagging behind, and Toby Mac was like the only name, and, you know, and it wasn't really even hip hop. These dudes started coming out of it. Mars Ill, Plato, Deep Space Five, you know, Scribbling Idiots, LA Symphony. And so I listen to a lot of that stuff with my girls just so that they can really get a good taste of what I think hip hop really, really, like, really what it has to offer. Because, you know, they never hear 101.1 The Beat or anything like that. I'm not into letting them hear the Iggy Azaleas and stuff like that. I don't want them to think in their mind, oh, this is what music is supposed to sound like. I don't want that. And so we show them a lot of music, man. And it's hard to, like, pinpoint one thing because we listen to it all. So country music, we listen to a lot of country music now, man.
Well, I'll tell you, man, it's like there's really no way to know what they're going to react to or what they're going to like or whatever. But, you know, I think it's cool to show them all what's out there.
Yeah.
You know, and I was so thankful, like you said, how we grew up the same way. You know, my dad obviously loved, you know, guitar driven classic rock and all that stuff. But he also showed us, you know, all the Motown and the Stevie Wonders and all that stuff as well. Yep. And he also would really make, and I was like 16 and I was like, oh my gosh, I cannot be more or less interested in this. But, like, he was like making me listen to, like, Brubeck and Miles.
Yeah.
And guys like that. And he was like, okay, now you're playing good. Like, I know, you know, but he was constantly pushing. He's like, but if you really want to take your game the next level.
Yeah.
Like, this is what you should dig
into. Absolutely, man.
And so he was like, you need to learn, you need to expand your horizons into, like, Latin. So he was like, listen to this, this is Santana stuff.
Oh, cool, yeah. You know, yeah, my mom got me big into Santana, man.
Yeah, and he was just always like, because it was like a challenge. When you tell your parents, well, I want to do what you do, which is play. And
right.
Then they're like, okay, so you think you can do this?
Yeah.
Well, then you're doing pretty good. Yep. But if you really want to take a game next, it was just like, it was almost like weird kind of like coaching or something.
Yeah, for sure.
But I look back now and it's like, thank goodness.
So thankful.
Yeah. And that if when guys ask me like stuff, my peers or whatever, like not everybody has to be a student of the game. Not everybody has to be a historian of their, you know, their instrument or other people that played it or whatever. But if somebody starts going down that rabbit hole, like, I'll go there with you.
For
like,
sure.
We're down. Like, we can talk about it.
And, yeah.
Like, and that's, like, ultimately I just wind up just like him challenging them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're doing good, but if you want to get better,
yeah,
like, here's how you do it.
Well, I think you're absolutely right that it's not essential. Like, you don't have to be a student of, like you said, a student of the instrument or the genre, whatever it is. But I do think that you'll find the people who are at the top of the game are the ones who are the students of it, man. You know what I mean? They are the ones that can talk shop with you and go back through the greats and the greats who may not have been that well known, you know? Those are the guys who really, really make a difference, I think, in any genre.
Yeah, I mean, when you look, I just watched a Keith Richards thing on Netflix, and like, I'm not, that's like, I know, I like those guys, their music, I love their look and their influence on culture. Mm-hmm. Like, I was aware of it, but I was never like the biggest fan of their sound. I mean, they had a cut, like, I really love like Paint It Black, and I really love Gimme Shelter, and I really love Jumpin' Jack Flash, but I was like, there was like four songs that I was like really loving of theirs. So I knew nothing really about those guys, but when you listen to them, and he's like almost 80 years old now, and you go listening to him talk about the way that he grew up and listening to music, and like, he knew about everybody.
Yep.
Like, and he looks, everybody thinks, oh, Keith, he's just toasted or whatever, but like, no, this guy knows what he's talking about.
Sure.
He knows, he remembers, he's just like the kid that he was when he first discovered the guitar and the old blues stuff that he loved. Like, ultimately, he's still that guy.
Yeah.
You know, except with more experience. And it was amazing to hear him and go, wow, man, this guy is, even with all his other stuff that people know him for, it's like, he's a student of the game.
Absolutely.
He knows what he's doing.
Yep.
And ultimately, I think it made it easier for them to write music that entertained the people.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
so.
Yeah, for sure.
So, so what? I don't know. This is like our first real conversation.
Yeah.
And then I do this a lot on the podcast, but that's one of the reasons why it's good, is it sort of muscles me into a situation where like, I actually have to have a real conversation with a person. So tell me about your journey as far as your own career with music and before you got here.
Sure. So, man, like I said, I always, you know, I played drums for a couple different bands, and so I've always been, I always knew that music was what I wanted to do. You know what I mean? Performing it, writing it, creating, you know. And so we would do these, you know, we'd play these skate parks, and it'd be like $3, and there'd be five bands, and in between the bands, sometimes, you know, you'd have dudes travel down from Boston, New York, whatever, because I grew up just north of Baltimore in southeastern Pennsylvania, and you'd have these hardcore bands, and then you'd have these cats in the middle of, like, the set change who were MCs, and they were rapping, and I just, when I saw these guys, I just fell in love with it, and I was always kind of rapping on my own. And, you know, my friends and I, we'd joke around and stuff and rap and freestyle and beatbox. But I just started really, really realizing how cathartic it was to start writing actual poetry and hip hop lyrics. And so, man, I started going heavy into that towards the end of high school. And, when I got into college, I really started experimenting with recording. I had like, I think I started on like Windows Movie Maker, like just using the audio, and then my mom got me Acid Music Studio, and then, you know, so I started getting into like beat production and stuff. So I got Fruity Loops, and I just started kind of stepping my way up through, went from there to Reason, Pro Tools, and now I work with Logic. But I started performing. I got a guitar, learned how to play acoustic guitar, cuz I'm a drummer. But I realized I can't just perform on my own as a drummer, you know, like nobody's going to come watch me play a 40-minute set just playing drums, you know? So I got a guitar, taught myself acoustic guitar, and, man, I started rapping and singing over the guitar, and it was really cool because it allowed me to play like coffee shops and churches where like hip hop normally wouldn't be. But because I was on an acoustic guitar and just doing it solo, you know, I was able to do it. And then I started getting into beat production. And when I got married in 2007, we moved to Denver that summer. And I recorded my first album, an EP out there. And just straight, you know, hip-hop beats, no, you know, live recording, no acoustic guitar, anything like that. And then I recorded a full-length album, my first full-length album in Cincinnati in 2009. And so, yeah, man, just been performing all over places, man. I performed in the Philippines for 2 weeks, did a bunch of stuff there. And, you know, bars in the middle of the hood, clubs in the middle of the hood, places in the suburbs, all over, man. Hip-hop has just taken me everywhere. And so, yeah, man. Been doing that. It's been a while since I've done a live show. Now I've been focused on a lot more of the kind of leading other people in it, you know, raising kids up in it. So
cool. So that's a fine segue there. That's what I want to get to today. And but I need you to tell me more about the Battleground.
Yeah.
Which I honestly saw a sign up down there at the restaurant and was,
yeah,
like, oh. And then you text me like literally that same night.
Oh, cool.
And it was like, because I just saw it, I was like, oh, somebody's doing hip-hop classes.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I was like, that's great. I just you know, I was thinking, oh, that's good. And I heard Destiny was doing it or whatever. And
yeah,
so is that an idea that you had for a long time? Or
yes, yeah, it's been 7 years, man. And when we were living in Cincinnati, before we even moved there, we randomly happened upon on the internet this hip hop youth center that was on the north side of Cincinnati called Elements, spelled with a Z. And as soon as we moved to Cincinnati, man, before we were even unpacked, I drove down there and just went into the lobby, sat down, and started meeting people, and got plugged in there, man, and started helping out there some. And you know, it was just a place where it was a really, really dangerous neighborhood. And, it's a neighborhood called Over the Rhine, if I didn't say that a second ago. But these kids, when they would get out of school, they would come straight to Elements, man. And there was like over 100 kids a day, I think it was, that come there. And there was recording studios and dance studios and a graffiti room and DJ room. And these kids were able to come and just create. And, man, there were so many cool things about it, so many beautiful things. And that's what sparked the, you know, me thinking, man, if I did something like this, how would it look? Cause there were great things about it. And there were things that, you know, just for me personally, if I were running it, I would have done some things differently. But you know, so 7 years ago, man, is when that happened. And Tracy and I, my wife, we just started dreaming, man, and praying. And when we moved to Springfield, Ohio, we thought that that's where it was going to happen. But God opened up some other opportunities, and I saw that there was a lot more room for me to grow before I was ready to take on that venture. And when we came to Nashville, man, and got plugged in with this church that we're at, the church at Woodbine, just down the street, man, God just opened up the door, and I just knew that he was telling me, do it, go, you know. And so last fall I started the process of, you know, filing for 501c3 status and doing all that jazz, and did it all. You know, my brother is an attorney in Florida, and so we talk every night on the phone, and he'd give me wisdom and tell me what I needed to do so I didn't get, you know, arrested. And you know, and so he was a huge help, man. And, yeah, we did it. And so the beginning of this year, everything became official, and we kicked off the Battleground Urban Arts Center on February 2nd of this year. So like 4 months ago.
So where does it take place?
It takes place, in one of the buildings at the church at Woodbine, which is 29 Whitsett Road. And it's this really awesome, beautiful church that's just kind of hidden in this really cool little neighborhood, man, that's super diverse. And, you know, the church is doing incredible things there, reaching out to, you know, touching all different ethnicities and demographics. Really, really cool. But we're in one of the buildings there, and we have a couple rooms. And so we've got 4 full production and recording studios in there, that are just top of the line. Really, really dope, man. We did a big fundraiser and raised, the goal for this year is $35,000, but we raised a little over $18,000 at the first run of it. And so we were able to really, really kick it off with some really cool gear, man. So when the kids came in for the first time, they, you know, they were excited. And so we have a room that we're going to be starting the graffiti classes in. Downstairs, we have a big fellowship hall area that is going to be where the hip-hop dance and break dancing classes are going to be. And, got really beautiful Newmark NS7 turntables donated to us. And so we'll be kicking that off in the next couple weeks as well. And, yeah, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had no idea it was the studios and all. I didn't know that.
Yep. Yeah. So Destiny just recorded her first track there, man.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Killer, dude. Unreal.
That's probably, see, and like, I've been in this neighborhood a long time, so like, I'll speak to it, but like, I've often wondered what kids miss out on because they're from here.
Sure.
In my life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I used to say, well, you had to get out of here in order to whatever, take yourself to the next thing. And like, my thing growing up was always like, well, I don't want to be just another Woodbine person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I had a label for that. I knew
right.
what that looked like. And that's, but now, like, with the way things have changed in this area, it's like, that's not the same stigma anymore.
Sure.
It's grown into something completely different and
yeah.
something that's more along the lines of, like, you know, what we always wanted.
Yeah.
So, somebody like her, for instance, you bring her up, like, you know, I've known her since she was this big or whatever, and that's like, how big of an impact does her having that opportunity, do you think, make on the rest of her career if she decides to go down that road, whereas if she might not have had it otherwise?
I think about that a lot, man. We have some incredible talent coming every single day there right now. And when I step into the studio, when the kids are making beats, or, you know, they're writing rhymes, you know, they're putting words together in ways, you know, that I've never seen kids that young do. And Destiny comes in with these lyrics that she's written. She's, you know, 17 years old, high school kid, writing these lyrics that are beyond her years, man. Like, there's one, hopefully this translates well, but there's one line in this song that she just that she's working on recording right now. And she says, "I walk around with a smile that you know is fake, like pleather or like the fruit that's on the table at your grandma's house." And that line, like the fruit that's on the table at your grandma's house, it at first listen, it sounds like, yeah, okay, well, but that, the observation that she shows in that and her ability, like, everyone can relate to that, dude, like fake fruit at your grandma's house or so, you know what I mean? I don't know. The stuff that these kids are doing, the things that they're writing, is so awesome. And to be able to provide them with a place that these things don't just have to sit stagnant and just become nothing, you know, that they move in a tote when they get married and move off. And, oh, remember, I used to write that. No, like, they can now, when they write these things in study hall or in class or whatever at home, they come here and they can actually create something with it and actually record it, man, and hear it to an instrumentation that's written specifically for them and for that song is unreal, man. You know, and one of the coolest things is, you know, what one of the things that Destiny said when she walked in was she felt safe there. Like, she just felt so comfortable. And that's what I want, man, because so many of our kids do not live in safe neighborhoods. They do not live in safe homes. And so to be able to have a place that they can come and that it's kind of a refuge for them, and if they can spend 4 hours there and they don't have to work on a single thing, they can just be for 4 hours, is that means the world to me, man. And that's what I want, you know?
Well, you're doing it. You're providing a place. You're providing shelter, in
yeah.
other words. Like, you're providing a sanctuary.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I think back to my story, I go, well, you know, we might not have been what people would call privileged.
Sure.
As far as money. But I look at this room and I go, you're privileged.
Yeah.
Because you had a room on your place that you could go to and just process.
Yeah.
Go learn songs.
Right.
Go hit drums as hard as you want.
Yeah.
You know, and if it wasn't for this room, then I wouldn't have been able to do it.
Sure.
So that being the case, like, maybe we wouldn't have been able to accomplish what we accomplished as teenagers and whatever, and
yeah.
on and on, early 20s, and go around the world every, you know, the Vespers was born in here. If it wasn't for this room, what would have I don't know what would have happened with that.
Yeah.
But that sucker, man, I mean, everything has to have a starting place, and decisions that other people make, you know, yeah. Like my dad being like, okay, I'm going to buy this house because it has this room attached to it.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a good place for me, you know, he was saying for him to be able to, you know, I'm saying, have bands over and play yeah. in bands and all that. But in turn, it was like that same decision was used to go for me and my brother.
Sure.
And both of us live and work in that field because of a decision that he made.
It's crazy.
Right? So the decision that you make is offering and I know there's conviction and a calling that helped lead you there.
Sure.
But the point is, because you went through with it and you went through the hassle of I don't know how many hours of phone calls to make it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Now other kids are going, I had a starting place.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
And for this neighborhood, it's like, bro, I've seen a lot of stuff change for the better here, but like as far as like stuff that I never would have dreamed of, but that's definitely on the list. Like
yeah.
The fact that that building, I know the building that you're talking about,
yeah.
But the fact that that building is a hotbed now for the gospel ultimately.
Yeah.
And for it to be a sanctuary.
Yeah.
I can remember when Ludi Street was the roughest street in Woodbine.
Yeah.
I can remember when if you wore the wrong color, you could get shot at.
That's where one of our main kids lives, on Ludi.
Yeah. I mean, it was known. Like, yeah. In our school, like, you think you're tough, go walk down Ludi Street. That yeah. was what the teachers would tell us.
Yeah.
Like, legit. And so, now I look back over there and I go, I can still see the remnant. I can still see what's left.
Yeah.
And I can still, you know, you can still see some of it. But, like, at the same time, you go, there's a new house.
Yeah.
There's a new house.
Yep.
There's a new, like, it's just, God is the type of God that, like, makes, you know, beautiful things out of nothing.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
takes stuff that is broken and makes it new again.
Yeah.
And he's a creator. And, like, we have the opportunity to be like God when we sit down and create.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So I just can't say enough good things. I've never been there. I've never stepped foot in the building yet, but I want to come.
Yeah.
And
yeah, we'd love to have you.
So what are the ages of the kids that come over there?
So the ages are 13 to 20 right now. And so, you know, that reaches into like eighth grade, which I feel like kids are really, they're a lot of eighth graders are still struggling, but they're kind of coming into a place where they can handle being put into a room with some really dope equipment and say, you know, taught, and then say, okay, it's yours, you know? And so, yeah, 13 to 20, but ultimately the goal would be to have certain times where it's open for 20 and up, you know what I mean? Or 21 and up, you know, to where we can actually provide some studio time for some artists who are established and just need a place, you know? So, but right now it's 13 to 20. Yep.
So, and are you, is the church, they're obviously on board with what you're doing, but
yeah.
they're, so that, how helpful is that to have?
It's been huge, man, because it, you know, the church at Woodbine was, it's been there for like 80 years. Right. And it was literally dying out. Like it was,
I know.
It
That's
was,
what I know it as.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like 30 people left in it or something, and older people who were just like so just persevering, man, and enduring. And there were other people trying to come in and buy this building from them who they didn't want buying it. And so they took it upon themselves to go to Brentwood Baptist and say, we do not want this church to leave this community. Can you help us? And so a conversation started, and Brentwood, you know, said, yeah, we will come alongside of you, bring you into the, you know, our family and make you a ministry campus and an extension of Brentwood Baptist. And like a year ago, man, Tracy and I showed up with our girls and we walked in and there was just, I mean, it was, you know, I don't want to sound mean or anything, but it was, you know, white hair everywhere. And we walked in and these two older women said, oh, there's kids. We'll watch your girls. and so at that moment, Trace and I were like, oh man, there's no kids. There's no fam, like young families. So we were like, okay. So they took our girls And we left, and you know, we tried a couple other churches, and there was one Sunday where I just said, you know, I looked at Tracy, and we were leaving this church, and I said, I feel like we need to go back to the church at Woodbine. I don't know why. And she said she felt the same way. So we went back there, man, and we've been there ever since. And now it's like 170 people on Sundays, young families from Africa, Syria, Iraq, Hispanic, you know, families. You know, last Sunday, scripture was read in Swahili, Spanish, and Chinese. We have a Chinese Sunday school class. It's stupid how much it's grown, and it's awesome, man. I love it. And so when I first, you know, that pastor, Doug Jones, who's the pastor there, he and I are really close. And, you know, when I first shared the vision with him at Waffle House at like 11 at night, one night, he was all in, and he said, I want you to meet with the leadership team, and I want you to share with them what you've shared with me, you know, the vision for the battleground. And so I met with the leadership team, and there's a lot of older people in that. And I explained to them, you know, just kind of the different elements of hip hop and how I wanted to use it to reach out. And there's a man named Marlon who's just an incredible man. And he kind of said, we don't necessarily understand everything that you're talking about, but we know you understand it, and we fully support you, man. And that's been huge. I have so many people who wouldn't in their life ever listen to hip-hop, know anything about hip-hop, wanting to help and serve and love our kids, man. And they don't care about the hip hop part of it, that, you know what I mean? But they just know that this is a way that these kids can come in and feel safe and create and get things that are going on in their lives off their chest. And they support that, man. And that has been huge. I wouldn't have been able to do it without them, you know? So, and for them to say, yeah, have this room. It's incredible, man.
Well, I can't imagine what they must think to see the church being back brought to life.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there are people there in their like 70s or 80s who were born in the church. They've gone there since they were babies, man. And to like...
That's old school.
Yeah, it's everything to them, man. And so for them to have been in a place where they were looking in the face of adversity and like imminent being shut down, you know, and sold off, to have been at a place where they really, really thought that that's what was going to happen, to now seeing it a year later, repairs done, back in the main sanctuary, the roof isn't leaking anymore. There's young families, there's kids running around. Oh my gosh, man. There's a choir it's cool, man. It's cool.
Well, I tell you, man, there's a lot of churches that are in that same position,
yeah,
in this end of town. And it's always been like, you know, I became a believer in 2010, and like 2010 Woodbine was a different thing than it is now. Like even in that amount of time, I'm sure you can imagine,
but yeah,
like, it was just still like what I grew up in. It was, you know, still kind of territorial when it comes to different stuff. And you had like Woodbine locals. And again, I don't, you know, all that to say, like, it was a real low point for churches over here. And I'm looking around, I'm going, well, I got to find a church, so I got to go to Brentwood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I got to find a church, so I got to go to, you know, Midtown.
Right.
Nothing like the local church as far as around my house was like not an option.
Yeah.
Because it was all people that were like, you know, God bless them, they're soldiers, but they were the last remaining ones.
Right.
The old school, like my grandparents, because I grew up in a church that was this way. Like, you know, we were the only kids, us and three or four other kids, and that was it. And it was like the people that have been at the church since it first went in there.
Yeah.
And so the story of a church being revitalized and brought back up, and these same old people getting to go, wow,
Yeah.
Like, even us, even we thought, we didn't have probably the type of faith to believe that this could happen.
Yeah.
In this building ever again.
Yep.
And so what a gift it is for them, the ones who persevered. You talk about the Israelites in the wilderness. Like,
yeah.
You know, that's what imagery comes up to mind, is like the ones who didn't die off, got
right.
to see the other side of
yeah.
it or whatever. And it's like, you know, 40 years. Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, because my dad would tell me, you know, in the 60s and 70s, it was like booming. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, then somewhere between now and then, and obviously life goes up and down in neighborhoods and cities. They all do that. But like right now, one of the benefits of everything good that's happening over here is I think that's amazing.
Absolutely,
you know? And
man.
I hope that it can be the model and give hope to some of these other churches.
Absolutely.
Like the one right down the hill here.
Yep.
You know, and the one up on the hill.
Yep.
You know, it's just like there's these nice buildings
yeah.
that have loads of potential.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and the church, you just can't, no matter what happens in this crazy world, you just can't keep the Church of Jesus down.
No.
You just can't do it.
And I think we see a, you know, an incredible example of what happens when churches can humble themselves and realize that there are other churches who might have stronger resources or different resources, whatever it is, and we're all fighting towards the same thing, man. Like, we are all trying to make an impact for the kingdom. And so when churches can realize, hey, we're struggling, let's go to some other churches that we know are really just healthy and can guide us and lead us and share wisdom and share resources, you know, huge change can happen, man. You know, I think just a lot of times churches get into positions where they're like, we've done it so long by ourselves and this is just kind of the end for us. And it's like, that doesn't have to be the case, man. You know, reach out. And so, yeah, that's been really cool to see.
Well, conversations, man. Everything we've talked about today, it seems like it was all sourced out at conversations.
Yeah.
You know, you having conversations with elder team and your brother and now the church saying, well, their leadership have enough, you know, like you said, humility to go to another church that's thriving in a different, completely different side of town.
Yeah.
By the way, like 10, 12 miles away.
Right.
You know, and going, hey, look, here's our situation. You might never have heard of us,
mm-hmm.
but this is what the deal is.
Yeah.
You know, and like, if you can help us, great. If not, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and just like conversations, like we have to be courageous enough to just start conversations
yeah.
in this crazy world
yep.
to see what is on the other side of it.
Absolutely, man. Well, some of the greatest, you know, things that have happened, you know, for the battleground, that the biggest things that I've seen God do are because, you know, he led me to a place or a person where I just struck up a conversation with them. And then all of a sudden, oh, this person does this or has done this. And then you just, you know, we miss so many opportunities to grow and to really impact because we just, you know, we get caught up in the busyness and or whatever it is, and we just don't strike up conversations with people, man, you know? So
what if, how does a kid sign up for the battleground?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you come to the church at Woodbine, show up and you come in and we'll get you started on, you know, on the programs that we run with Logic Pro X, and we'll start teaching you through that. With the kids, it's $10 for the whole year, and the $10 isn't for the center. The $10 gets put into just a pot, and at the end of the year, the kids will vote on what they want to use that money for. So the $10 is solely for them to be able to feel some type of ownership. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, a 14-year-old coming in and dropping, you know, or over a couple weeks, bringing in a couple bucks each time and getting up to 10 bucks, you know, that kid now can say, you know, I paid to be here. I paid for this. This is mine too. And I have a voice in this, you know, this isn't just given to me, you know, I paid for this. And so, you know, I deserve to have a voice, that kind of thing. You know, it just gives them some ownership. So, but yeah, man, kids can, you know, you can go to thebattlegroundnashville.com is our website. And we've got the times up there. Right now we're doing summer hours is Monday and Friday from 1 to 5, and then Tuesday and Wednesday from 3 to 7. And then Wednesday nights we have we cut the arts off at about 5:30. We eat dinner together, and then we have a Bible study and just kind of an open discussion and talk through life. And so, yeah.
Cool, man. Well, what's next for you, bro?
What's next for me, man, is just continuing to fundraise, continuing to push the battleground and trying to raise awareness about it and, you know, trying to grow it into its the potential that's there and reaching more kids you know, trying to get these kids to realize the potential they have to really, really impact this community, you know, the state, the country, the globe, man, they have the potential to do that and helping them to realize that. And so, you know, getting them, number one, mentoring them, discipling them, number two, getting them just engaged and active in the community. And so, and ultimately, man, you know, hip hop will always remain at the core of the battleground, but we want to offer everything, man, from violin to ballet to theater, everything. We just want to offer it to urban youth who don't have the ability to do this elsewhere, you know? And also ultimately we want to start planting the battleground in other cities around the country. So, you know, just if you don't live in Nashville, you can still support it because it might come to your city, you know?
Exactly. So, well, Joel, I appreciate you. Thank you for coming down. And yeah, man, it's like, this is, again, I mean, is a small way that I can help people maybe start conversations.
Absolutely.
And great, you know,
yeah. Like,
so I hope any of you out there that, you know, are moved or you know, convicted, or you feel good about what Joel's told you today, man, like hit him up and send him some encouragement, email him, you know, certificates of appreciation are always welcome too, if you want to help the cause. And, yeah, man, if you live in Nashville and you think this would be a cool thing for your son or daughter, hit them up. Come down. We're right here in South Nashville, Woodbine community. We're right in the middle of everything. So come see us.
And my email, if you want to get in touch with me, is joel@thebattlegroundnashville.com.
How much easier can it be, folks?
Boom.
Just hit the man up. So, well, I guess this wraps up another week, y'all.
Yeah, man.
We've had a good one. This is going to be fun. I'm excited for what's going on in my neighborhood, man. Never would have believed it. That's how good God is, man.
For sure.
He'll surpass your expectations. So, well, I guess for Joel Frame, I'm Taylor Jones. We'll see y'all next time.